The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Well, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, deferred from 3 months ago after that infamous security breach, happened last night. The much-anticipated set piece is always the humorous address of the guest of honour, the President of the United States. So this is a sample of Donald J. Trump's stand-up last night.
Just like my presidency, the second time is always better. It's always better. And the third time will be better yet. But after hearing the gunshots, many people yelled, "Get down, get down," which caused Nicki Minaj to start twerking. You believe it? Get down. She's the only one that really understood what that meant. I hope that everyone finally got to enjoy their entire very delicious beef tenderloins, very special beef. And I want you all to know that Bobby Kennedy, who's right here, personally ran over the cow in his car. And he cut it up and he brought it here for you to eat tonight. So it's very fresh. Just remember, before I came along, if you wanted to see someone lose consciousness on the south lawn of the White House, all you had to do is ask Joe Biden a question. Remember that. What about Bruce Springsteen? What the hell happened to that guy? Talked about, he made four political speeches in his three-hour show. The tour has been renamed Bored in the USA. I do think we need term limits in Congress. I think term limits are very important because I see what's happening. I see what's happening. The other day, a senator I knew got a text, a great guy, from his wife. And she said, "When you get home, I want to have you immediately come up the stairs and make love to me." And he said, "I can't do both." You know what? In other words, can't go up the stairs and make love. Does anybody get that? Well, I thought that was actually pretty good. That was actually the only thing I thought was good in this whole freaking stupid speech that they wrote.
Scott, good morning and welcome.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
Now, did you manage to catch any of the president's remarks overnight at the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
Yeah, for my sins, I did, Pat. My ears are still burning from it. This is supposed to be a centerpiece event. Back in recent history, where the press and politicians could get together, they could unwind a bit because, of course, on a day-to-day basis, the press is there to hold politicians to account. Politicians put back. Everybody can share a laugh. Very different in the Trump years, and that was illustrated last night where Trump carried out a series of what some people were trying to claim were jokes, but in fact were just simply a stream of insults and rants, including two of the members of the press to whom he had given, quote, awards only minutes earlier.
Now, that is a set piece, and, he has to follow people like Obama, whose remarks tended to be very humorous and scintillating and entertaining. He was not that, but I suppose he has to go through these set pieces to try to prove he's at least Obama's equal.
Well, the context to this, Pat, is that, of course, a few months ago, this event had to be scrapped because of a man who charged through security, who may or may not have posed a threat to the gathering, which was in the basement of the hotel below. So the Trump folks wanted to show that the event goes on, but more importantly, they want to show their control of the event. The way this event used to take place, you not only had the president who made remarks, you referred to Obama, who in 2011 teased Trump when he was at that event, but you also had, a stand-up comedian, usually very, very good ones, who would, carry out banter and poke a bit of fun at the president as well. White House has scrapped that. They simply took offense at anyone who was carrying out jokes at Trump's offense. And now this is my event, Donald Trump. And of course, he used it again, not just to attack the press that were there. He used it to attack other politicians last night with derogatory nicknames that I won't even repeat here.
Now, we wanted to talk about an article which we saw in the Guardian newspaper by a doctor, Robert B. Spiner. I don't know the man at all, but I was very taken by his analysis of some speeches made from within the administration. And we can hear just clips of some of them. First of all, Marco Rubio.
This is what radical leftism is. It may wear various different slogans and ideologies across place and time, but the fundamental character is always the same. It's always the same. It is a poisonous resentment cloaked in the language of equality and justice and liberation, an overwhelming need to tear down what greater men have built, to wreck what is beautiful and what is right on behalf of people who are only filled with ugliness and have nothing else to offer the world.
So this idea of extreme leftism being some sort of a cancer in America, that was the Secretary of State Marco Rubio. But let's hear from Stephen Miller.
Here in the United States, we've seen a growing and deeply alarming increase in attempted assassinations against public figures. Most notably, of course, the multiple assassination attempts against President Trump, the successful assassination attempt against Charlie Kirk, many others. This is a fatal cancer to civilization. And the greatest risk that we have is that our institutions have grown too soft and too cowardly to be able to defend themselves against a mortal threat.
So that was Stephen Miller. There is a theme coming out here of extreme leftism, the danger to their vision of a Trump democracy. And we all think we know where it's heading. It's for maybe the subverting of the midterms in November.
So a few things are in play here, Pat. First of all, just historically, you know, this is the Red Scare again. You know, a few years before I was born in the 1950s, you could talk about McCarthyism. You could talk about the blacklist of many thousands of Americans because of Reds under the bed. And of course, people were using this for political exploitation at a time when the U.S. and the Soviet Union were in the Cold War. Well, now it's being revived 70 years later with this, you know, anybody that the Trump folks don't like, that they consider a political opponent, all of a sudden they become a communist or a radical socialist, as if, you know, somehow those folks are coming in to destroy everything that is American. Of course, that's not true. At least, you know, name you one communist who even holds public office in the States, for example. Secondly, it is an attempt to invoke culture wars, and this is to whip up basically issues over rights, whether it's gender rights, women's rights, whether it's rights for minorities, whether it's basic economic rights, and to say, this is the left that's coming over to destroy your country. In other words, diversity is bad, equality is bad, inclusion is bad. But the third thing, Pat, and we need to call this out for what it is, because I've just been going over notes for a book I'm writing on Trump. This is an attempt to take down the system. It's an attempt to take down the American system, first of all, because the Trump folks don't believe in the rule of law. They don't believe in the judiciary. They don't believe they should be checked by Congress. They don't believe they should be checked by journalists. And they don't believe they should be checked by those who say, no, look, we think there's a different way of doing things. And that all stems from the fact that Donald Trump's side, and let's put it out here, in 2023, as he talked about, as Stephen Miller does, the cancer within, that reference to a phrase used in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, as he talked about his opponents being vermin, another phrase used by the Nazis in 30s Germany, he said, from day one, I act like a dictator, and I do that for retribution against my opponents. This is in plain sight, Pat, and you can choose the American system or you can choose the Trump folks. You cannot choose both.
Why do you think it is that everything he's doing, which is in plain sight, you know, he's running a kleptocracy, he's making himself incredibly wealthy on the back of the presidency, and then you have these accusations about the electoral system throughout the states, and you've got people being falsely arrested on immigration charges and not even getting their day in court. Doing all of this in plain sight, can you parse that for me to try to understand why so many Americans will accept this?
Well, first of all, Pat, if you go back a decade to when Trump ran for and got the presidency, he was like the snake oil salesman in the Wild West. You know, I'm going to make things better for you. I'm here. I'm going to be the cure to your ills. And we have to acknowledge in 2024 that he was successful with that gambit, which is, oh, look, the economy is terrible. Immigration's terrible. I'll solve that. When he can't solve that, that becomes the interesting question, which is why do people go along with that? Well, some people are just dug in too deep. It's like it becomes almost a cult of personality. I've got members of my family who are diehard Trumpists. there are others, I must emphasize, who are no longer drinking the Kool-Aid, which is why the Trump folks may be in trouble during the election. But then the other issue that I think I have, Pat, is that when Trump tests the system, and when his folks like Stephen Miller actually come out openly and say, we're going to break the system, the press still operates on the idea of, well, we still have to observe the rules of the game as journalists. And I understand that, but what they do is they try to normalize this. They try to normalize this as concerns about immigration or concerns about the U.S. government. And they don't call out the fact. This isn't like concerns that other presidents would have had. This isn't what's happening here. This is wannabe authoritarianism. And sometimes they'll refer to that, but then on a day-to-day basis, they go back to the fact of, let's treat this as if this is just a standard process of politics within the system rather than an actual threat to it.
Now, the concern that the Democrats have, and they had a big meeting to try and work out how to combat Trump's attempts to subvert the election results in November. And you can understand why. This is Trump himself.
Every American deserves to know that when they cast their vote, that vote will be counted accurately. Unfortunately, the system we have today falls catastrophically short.
So that's the idea, to tell people their system is flawed. So maybe why bother vote in November?
So it is initially, it's an attempt by the Trump folks to manipulate the electoral system. They are concerned about these midterm congressional elections because the economy is has serious problems. It, even before the war in Iran, which has made those problems worse, they're in that war in Iran, which appears to have no end. At least from their point of view, with it, more than 70% of Americans now opposed to it. Their immigration offensive has backfired because they went too far when they killed U.S. citizens, when they were seen to rough up, to disappear, as well as detain asylum seekers, as well as migrants. And so what do they do? It's like, okay, maybe we can discourage mail-in voting. Maybe we can even take steps to prevent mail-in voting. Maybe we can make it harder to vote early. Maybe we can make it harder to count those votes after they've been cast. And, of course, you have the redistricting, which has favored Republicans so that they can try to hold on to more seats in the House of Representatives. But then what really worries me, Pat, is that this sets up the pretext to rig the elections, or to overturn them, I should say, afterwards. Back in 2020, after Trump lost in November, the White House went so far as to draft an executive order to seize voting machines. That was actually considered in a White House meeting in mid-December. Now, it was blocked by the Justice Department, blocked by the White House counsel. There was a dry run earlier this year, which was a raid on voting machines in Georgia, where the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was there. The Trump folks could, if they don't like the results of the election, go in and try to seize voting machines on the pretext that there is fraud, and this time they have a Justice Department, which is Trump's playground, which will not stand up against them.
Finally, Scott, I heard some speculation on the Rest is Politics U.S. That there may be boots on the ground in Iran very soon. They've deployed 150 doctors to the medical facility they have in Germany, and there are other moves, moving aircraft here, there, and yon. But any expeditionary force would probably be rather small. But still, boots on the ground, body bags coming home. Is that likely, or is this some sort of a show of strength?
We were there in early April, Pat, you might remember. In fact, you and I may have discussed it then, which is that the Americans had failed to get regime surrender with this protracted bombing of Iran, despite causing almost $300 billion of damage, despite killing thousands of Iranians. And so the only alternative to talks with the Iranians was to go in with a ground assault. And they were mobilizing forces, including members of the 82nd Airborne paratroopers, who could go in and take Iranian islands, for example. And one of the islands is called Karg Island, where 90% of Iran's oil exports go through there. Well, we're back here in July where people are saying, well, could this happen again? And the noise is being, sort of ratcheted up. The U.S. is saying, we could do this, we could do this. The issues are still the same, Pat. One is that, as I mentioned earlier, there is massive opposition to this war in the first place. And there's even more than two-thirds of Americans oppose ground troops going in. there are those within the administration who oppose this, notably Vice President J.D. Vance. Secondly, the military is making clear this would not be a walkover. The Iranians have not been destroyed as a force to resist this. And this would spike further those gasoline prices because it'd be a further shock to energy supplies going through the Strait of Hormuz.
Scott Lucas, professor at the Clinton Institute at UCD. Scott, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Pat. Thank all your great listeners.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.